With NFR Extra, we're going to take you behind the scenes in a way you've never heard before. Every 2 weeks, you're going to hear personal conversations with the icons and personalities that make up the world's richest and most prestigious rodeo. NFR Extra. All dirt, all rodeo, all year.
Episode 10 of NFR Extra. I am your host, Nevada Caldwell.
And who am I? I'm Bo Gardner, your other host for NFR Extra.
I know we say this every time. This is a great episode.
This one's going to be a chart topper.
Yes, it will. This week's episode is a little different. We caught up with this gentleman, this young guy that's moving up the ranks.
I don't know how you can call him an up-and-comer, but...
Yeah, I mean, coming from the family he's a part of.
Yeah.
But it's Stetson Wright. This very great kid, man. Great conversation. And if I was riding bulls or broncs, I would be a little worried right now.
It's definitely right. We also had the opportunity to sit down with Kirsten Vold, owner of Vold Rodeo Company. She's also daughter to one of the few rodeo legends, Mr. Harry Vold.
Yeah, great conversation there.
A little behind the scenes.
A lot of behind the scenes.
Yeah. I'm world champion bull rider Sage Kimsey, and you're listening to NFR Extra.
This is Bo's Bull, the rodeo news of the week.
PRCA stat of the week, $864,376 is the combined payout of Snake River Stampede and California Rodeo Salinas over the weekend.
That's good. Those are big numbers for both them rodeos.
That's a lot of dollars.
Woo.
The Pro Rodeo Tour rodeos set individual records for their payout.
Those are some big records.
Someone's got some, somebody came in with a lot of those big checks.
Speaking of records, Mr. Stetson Wright is holding the number one spot in the all-around with a $128,000-plus lead.
Did you mention he rides stock?
Did you say up-and-comer?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Come on.
Because he's got teen attached to his age. So, yes. But it's very impressive. Keep a watch on the bull riding world standings as,
who's this guy?
There he is again. Stetson Wright and Trevor Katzner chase Mr. Kimsey in the number one spot with all him. I mean, that's not much. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a lot in our pocketbooks right now. But as far as standings go, $24,000 is what's keeping these folks apart. And that's, Sage hasn't seen that kind of heat in a while. And this is,
I wonder if he feels it or... likes it or
he probably enjoys it. I mean, definitely motivates him.
That is definitely his motivator.
And I think that the guy that we have on the show will kind of add to a lot of that and why.
We're headed to Cheyenne Frontier Days, where they had their first breakaway roping event with over 240 girls roping at the big daddy of them all.
We know what that's all about over at the Las Vegas Convention Center.
Yes,
right?
The Junior World Finals.
Absolutely. Well, just remember, for more information about the world standings and the National Finals Rodeo, visit NFRExperience.com. And while you're at it, don't forget, if you listen to us on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, don't forget to hit subscribe.
Hi, I'm Boyd Paul Hamus, and you're listening to NFR Extra.
Man, we're cooking through just like the summer.
Cowboy July's, Christmas.
Yeah, we're right in the middle of everything. Mm-hmm. A lot of good things. Standings changing left and right. Yep. Take your pick. But today, a nice important person on this podcast here. We have Kirsten Vold, owner of Harry Vold Rodeo Company, daughter to one of the few rodeo legends, Harry Vold. Welcome to the show, Kirsten.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here. I appreciate you having me here.
We have so many questions for you, but we're not going to ask. We're just going to let you tell us a few stories of your whole transition and how everything has evolved. But so excited to have you on the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And I guess first off, I'll kind of tell you, the company's name has changed, and it's now the Vold Rodeo Company. And that was simply sort of a transition in business because people sometimes didn't know what to say. They didn't know if it was still Harry Vold Rodeo Company after my dad's passing, or if it was just some people were already shortening it to Vold Rodeo Company. So we just kind of made the switch. I visited with my mom about it last year, and we kind of made the change and made it legal, and so now it's the Vold Rodeo Company.
Well, congratulations.
That's awesome. That's really good. Well, and that actually...
If nothing else, it just makes it shorter when you're writing things.
Well, and that actually...
Less hand cramps.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, Kirsten, that actually flows right into this next question. Kind of what we're there's been a big evolution going on with the rodeo, and you've been a part of it. You get to see a lot of it. What's it been like watching rodeo evolve with rodeo history? What have you seen, and definitely where you're sitting now?
I mean, Kirsten started when she was only 25 with her father.
I started younger than that.
And wait a minute, she's started managing the company, right? Learning how to manage this company, and you, right, of six children. So, right. Give us this whole evolution.
Real quick, when you were 25, so that was last year, 2 years ago?
Yes.
That was 21 years ago. I'm 46 now. It's really not a secret, so I don't really imagine it's a secret there either. I've seen a lot of things, and I've grown up in this business, and that was probably why it was an easier transition for me being a girl at the age of 25 than it would have been for some other females at that young of an age, just because people were so used to seeing me around. I'd been at the rodeo since I was born. I didn't go to public school until high school. I had a tutor that went on the road with us. So I was at these rodeos year round and had been going to the same rodeos since birth. You know, a lot of them, you know, or very little. And I have a lot of memories at all these rodeos. I've watched the sport transition from, you know, like they've had tour, you know, you've seen a circle of things they tried back in the 80s when they tried team tour rodeos and concepts and team rodeos and that failed. And now we're circling back around and you see it trying again and they tried in different avenues and sometimes it's more successful because they're doing different things. And rodeo has become a lot more of a mainstream sport. When I was a child, it was a celebration and the Western lifestyle, like affairs and county fairs and things like that. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, you have it in buildings and huge cities and you're building stalls and parking lots. Yeah. And they've proved that they can put a rodeo on. In your city, in Las Vegas, I've seen them, you know, we did one at the MGM in June one time, you know, and they built stalls in a stacked 8-foot parking lot. And, you know, we literally didn't have to leave our rooms to go to the arena, except for the fact that, you know, we had to go get the animals and all that minor detail. But
are you talking about a PBR event? I mean, I remember those days when we had the PBR back in at the MGM, and we had the stock right out there in the loading area.
Well, it wasn't a PBR event.
Oh, was it? Okay.
It was called a summer tour finale.
Oh.
And they only had it at the MGM the first year.
Well,
I don't know. I think I was there the first year. I think they actually did it a couple of years there. Wow. I didn't go more than once the very first time. But yeah, I mean, it was, you know, it was huge and it was great. And they've proven that they can put a rodeo on in just about any place and bring animals in and facilitate them and make it safe and healthy for them. And so those are things that definitely as a child, you know, we didn't really have. My dad, you know, we'd go to a place where it was usually more rural areas. And, it's mainstreamed into television. And obviously now we're streaming it live. Like a lot of the rodeos 15 years ago wasn't even a concept. And
I mean, we're doing the Junior World Finals at the Las Vegas Convention Center with almost 900 kids. So... yeah.
Isn't that amazing? That's great. And which is great, which is wonderful, because those kids are the kids that are going to be getting on our animals
in
10 years.
Yep.
So, Kirsten,
so we have to cultivate that.
For you. So the evolution part of, and definitely for your world, is facilitating the animals and showing how that's been able to do, getting away from the ranch, getting into these cities, and how to really kind of... Because I've realized that facilitating the animals, that can make or break the rodeo wherever they're going, whatever city, if they're coming back. Because if that all fails, there's a good chance it's done. It ain't coming back.
Absolutely. That's the number one thing. I mean, you know, we participated in the American, and they do that every year at, you know, Texas Stadium. I think that's what they – is it Texas Stadium, AT&T Stadium?
AT&T.
AT&T.
Yeah, AT&T
He only Stadium knows that and, because he's a Cowboys fan, so.
Well, somebody has to be. They've got to have at least one fan
oh,
out there.
Oh, yes, yes. I'm definitely one of them.
No, but, I mean, that's a huge – You know, the first time I walked into that building, I was like, holy cow, can you imagine we're putting a rodeo on here today? And that was the largest TV screen I'd ever seen in my entire life, you know? And so, but yeah, you're right about the first priority is the animals, because whether it's the horses that the Cowboys are riding to compete on roping or steer wrestling or running barrels, or whether it's the livestock that we bring in on semis, straight trailers that are bucking horses, everybody has to have safe conditions. They've got to have, it's got to be conditions relevant to animals. You know, it can't be too hot in there. It can't be, they got to have water. There's just a lot of things that you got to take into account that you don't whenever you decide to bring a football, team in or NASCAR or anything like that. Anytime there's animals involved, there's a lot more priorities.
Oh, sure. Sure. So our fans, you know, they don't know the ins and outs of the livestock that, you know, they show up at the rodeo, they see the livestock maybe in the pens, they see it out in the arena, but they don't know what's all involved behind the scenes. And so with all your experience, we want to kind of take it back a little bit and just ask, so how's it all start? Does the rodeo committee just call and say, hey, bring us the best you got, and Or how does that work? Do the contestants have any say on this, or just kind of give us the whole selection process and what it works for, how it works for an everyday rodeo?
Okay, you know, the contestants are a lot more involved than they were in my dad's era. You know, as far as selecting the animals that go, if there's a short round, the directors, which are voted on by their peers, so like the saddle bronc riding director was voted on by the other saddle bronc riders, and they select somebody to represent them. And then in turn, just in the fence shootout I finished this past weekend at Pike's Peak or Bus Rodeo in Colorado Springs, those animals for that final round were selected by the director in each event. They looked through the animals that were available, you know, the animals that we had there, whether they be mine or other stock contractors that I brought in there, and they put together what they think is the most even, and that's the big thing they try to do, is to make it even.
Sure.
To try to get away from the era of the drawing contest. There's always going to be animals in there that people want to draw more than others, but you try to make it as even as possible so that these cowboys can have a riding contest in opposed to a drawing contest. And that's been probably one of the biggest changes and one of the biggest goals, I would say, from the contestants. And that's something I understand you got Stetson Wright coming in later.
Yep.
And that would be something that he's coming in. He's in a youth era, but it's – that his dad had to kind of pave for his sons, is that the Cowboys have got to change more where they're trying to get it where the livestock is more even and more, even if they're not, you know, you might mean leaving out a really good animal, but it's not fair for one guy to be able to draw the best horse by far and everybody else have to scramble over the others. So sometimes you got to take out the best animal and take out the worst animal to make it more even for the guys that qualify.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's something that the Cowboys have definitely become more involved in. As far as the rodeo committees, you know, so many of our contracts that we go to are existing contracts, or I shouldn't say existing contracts, but they've been rodeos that I've been going to my entire life. My dad got those contracts years ago. We've kept the relationship. We've always tried to do a professional and a good job, and the committees keep hiring us back.
Yep.
And those contracts back in the day were more of handshake agreements. You know, as time progresses, you have to progress with it. Now we try to do most things on paper. And that's not because anybody's trying to cheat anybody. It just keeps everybody's memories a little fresher.
It's a good documentation, if anything. Right?
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yep. And that happens. I mean, sometimes you have an agreement in December of how much you're coming for, but it's easy to forget that exact number 6 months later because life happens, you know, and it just – and so that's why – you know, you go to contracts. Most rodeo companies are on multi-year contracts of at least 3 years. And that way everybody can plan accordingly and know that they're going to be going back there next year and everything like that. Now, as far as what the animals you bring, you know, the committee, when they hire you, they're hiring you planning for you to bring them the best rodeo you can bring them.
Sure.
And sometimes that's cost sensitive, you know, like some rodeos have a larger budget so they can afford for you to bring in more animals from other people to bring in their best animals and things like that. Other rodeos have a smaller budget, so they have to, you have to use the animals according to what they can afford.
Sure.
Sometimes. And that's not, you know, it's not meaning that you do less of a job at one rodeo or the other. It's just sometimes it's when at the bottom line of any business is money. And so it has to be a figure that it works for everybody.
Got it.
And we're in Steamboat Springs, Colorado right now.
Oh,
and it's a
beautiful
summer series. And it's beautiful up here. It's wonderful.
We'll and trade you. We're only 108 today, so we'll trade.
Same. But it's beautiful up here, and it's a wonderful summer resort. But this is a circuit rodeo. It's a PRC rodeo. It's a circuit rodeo mainly for the Mountain State Circus.
Mm-hmm.
And this would be a training ground. Like, it's hard for a lot of the mainstream cowboys that are trying to make the finals. It's hard for them to work this rodeo because it's kind of far up in the mountains, and the added money isn't as high and stuff. So this is really predominantly made for our circuit cowboys, the guys that live in Colorado, Montana, Utah, and our permit holders, because there's got to be some place for these guys to come and win enough money to be able to go forward with their careers.
Mm-hmm.
And so this, you know, we don't bring, obviously, the A-team animals to this place because it wouldn't be fair to these younger cowboys that don't have that level of competition yet. You know,
yeah,
I mean, they're just, it doesn't do them any good to come get slammed in the dirt 5 weeks in a row.
That's muddy.
So
nice of
it's
you.
A great place. Well, and it's a great place for us as well to cultivate younger horses. They've got to go somewhere. It's not good for them to get on, you have guys get on them and just spur the hide out of them every time.
Yep.
So this is a great place for younger cowboys to meet up with younger horses. And, you know, we expect to see some sensational rides this week and next 5 weeks. You know, there'll be some great up-and-comers coming here. And I have hopefully some future superstars in our company. And so, yeah, I mean, we have great expectations, and I love this. This is what I love doing more than anything else is bucking young animals and seeing kids that are at the beginning of their careers. Not everybody's a Stetson Wright that just starts, you know, at 18 years of age,
yeah,
starts winning right off the bat.
Mm-hmm,
that, you know,
seriously.
That's, he's got the bloodlines and the genetics for it, it mm-hmm. seems to be, in their family. But in most families, you kind of have to pay your dues and you kind of have to get a few horses underneath you and get it figured out. And so that's what it's great to be able to participate in that. We love coming up here and doing
yep.
this.
Kirsten, you brought up, actually, it was the question I was going to ask. You brought up the word bloodlines. So, you know, mm-hmm. we've seen, and I used to be a part of the bucking horse sale that they used to do at Thomas Mack Center 20 years ago. And I remember they were selling Bodacious, and this has nothing to affiliate with you, but it's in the business you're in. They were selling Bodacious, you know, his semen, right? And that thing was going for ungodly amounts of money. My question is this, because I'm going to give you a comparison. This is going to be fun. Stock, right? And let's just say professional athletes, NBA, NFL, whatever. Does the gene pool really trickle down? Because when you think of Michael Jordan, he's got a son. People don't realize that guy's already a grown up, and he didn't become his father. Not even close. And then
right now
there's a lot of focus on, you know, the NBA world of like LeBron James kid or a lot of these guys' kids that are now coming up through the system, and they're like, there's just a lot of spotlight that are they going to be their father, or they're going to, you know, ascend to stardom.
Kind of stuff.
Does it trickle down in the stock contracting? I mean, I know you're going to probably answer this in a very political way, but I'm just curious. Does it trickle down to where that gene pool really does work in the science in the way that it's supposed to?
Well, it is no different than humans, okay? A couple will have two kids, and one kid will be a lawyer, and the other kid needs a lawyer. It's genetic. I mean, that's
brilliant
just the
answer.
Way it is. And so you can't, you know, it does. LeBron James might have six kids, and one wants to be a basketball player, and the other five can't dribble at all. And that's just the way it is. And we do it in the stock contracting business. We try to, you follow the bloodlines, and everybody watches it so closely, and now they're cloning champion horses so that they can make them that were geldings, so that they could be studs, so that they can breed them. And I'm looking at a stud right now that's out of a clone of a great three-time world champion bareback horse. They cloned her, and then I bred her my stud that we collect, Painted Valley, that's been very successful. We
Painted Valley, and, you know, an 6-time Wrangler Painted horse selection, and yep. I think they won twice, right? The 2000.
Well, he won Horse of the Year once in 2010, and he was
NFR Horse of the Year, right? And twice. Oh,
yeah.
Yep. Know that
one. Yeah. No, mm-hmm. he's the best thing about him has been the fact that his bloodlines have been very successful. He's been, you know, his colts buck. Sometimes it doesn't work that way. Sometimes great animals don't produce, but his have been great producers. And so, you know, but that being said, close to half the herd of horses that I haul now have some, you know, are offspring of him because he's been so successful.
Wow.
But that isn't always the case. It isn't, you know, there's also a lot of studs and mares out there that have been great animals, just like LeBron James is a great athlete. But no, it doesn't mean that they necessarily are going to produce great athletes. But the hopes, and in theory they are, because, you know, it's just like when they're breeding racehorses and everything like that. In theory, if you take a racehorse that runs really fast, a stud, and the mare that runs really fast, and you cross them, in theory, those genetics should cross, should bring out an animal that runs really fast.
Mm-hmm,
bucking horses are the same way.
Sure.
And yeah, and you know, and we see it all the time with people. The two athletes usually have athletic kids, but it doesn't mean that it's a perfect science. It doesn't always happen that way.
No, it's a, great answer.
So we all know that you do what you do because of the love of the sport and the love you have for the animals. You spend 200 days plus a year out on the road, and all of us want to know just a real simple question. Livestock animals. I know you already mentioned Painted Valley. We know that's up there on your list, and it may be on the top of your list, but you've got horse.
He is. Yeah, he's definitely. I mean, Painted Valley was like pennies from heaven. I'm not going to lie to you. He was a stud that he was a colt as a colt that my dad gave me. I'll tell you why. It was out of one of our really good mares, and there was another mare that was a really good mare, and they had two later colts. So when all the other colts got weaned, they weren't weaned.
Mm.
So we weaned them later that fall. And I was trying to talk to him, and I said, I need to be able to start my own string. And I said, so I could start with these two colts. And he was like, yeah. And if we're truly honest, if I used to give him a hard time about this, it was more than anything because he didn't want to mess with them because they were late colts and they'd be a pain in the neck and everything else turned out and everything else. But he gave those to me, and I took them, and I took them to where I kept my horse over. I lived in town at the time, and I kept my horse over there. And so I kept him in a pen next to him. And so I paid a boarding stable, and they had a pen, and that was the start of my, you know, illustrious bucking horse breeding line of my own. And nobody in their little stud colt would go on. We left him a stud, and Dad and my brother both wanted to cut him when he was a yearling. They're like, "Oh, you need to cut him," and I wouldn't. I kept him a stud, and then he didn't drop like most studs easily drop by the time they're two, their chest goes, and he.
Yeah.
He never did. He was almost three. And everybody told me, he's never gonna be able to breed right. You need to study. You're going to need to cut him. And I never did. I never would. And so, you know, the irony of that is people pay me $2,500 to breed to him now. And so
we go with our gut intuition, and that's what you did. You followed your intuition, and it's just, you know, the time you spend with those animals, you learn that.
Pennies from heaven.
There you go.
Yeah. And he's been gentle. He's so gentle, you know, I mean, because he was in the backyard, basically. He was raised as a pet. And so, yeah, there'll never be another animal that I can ever see that will hold a place in my heart like him.
Mm-hmm.
He's 18 years old. He just turned 18 years old this month. And, I mean, he was the boost in our rodeo company that we needed because we were kind of, you know, we'd had some trouble with some of our breedings, and we'd gotten into a stud that was a great bucking horse, but he wasn't a great producer. So there's an example of a person that, you know, of a stud that was great at the NFR and went there several times, but his offspring, the percentage was fairly low. And so we had kind of gotten into that, and we were running out of bucking horses, for lack of better words.
Yeah.
And so he came along, and like I said, he was pennies from heaven because everything, he never has owed me anything, but he's never given me anything but bucking horses and Bucking horses and money.
Oh, man.
Great stories.
This is fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you for... there's a lot we covered here in a matter of minutes.
You know, she's in Steamboat. I'm sure she's anxious to get out.
Yeah, I would. I've been there quite a few times, summer and winter. And either way, either pick, it's beautiful.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how far is that from... you're from Pueblo, right?
Right. It's 5 hours, but it's 6 when we bring the semis, when we have to stock some stuff. It's 6.
Still, that's close compared to Houston or Denver. Or, well, Denver's close, but San Antonio.
Calgary.
Yeah. Houston's 900 miles away, and it's significantly. I tell you one that's a little further than that is we go to Kissimmee, Florida every spring for the Ram Finals, and that's 3 days there and 3 days back, because with animals you got to stop, you know, and you got a place to stop. And so it's a trek. It's a trek. It's a trek over there, but they're so good to us there. They're so happy to have us there. They're so appreciative that we come so far, that every year when you leave, you're happy to go, and then you get there and you're so tired and you're like, why do we come here? And then the people and the hospitality, that's what they do for a living is tourism. And they're so wonderful to us that by the time you leave, you forgot how long it was until you get home at the end of the 3 days. And you're like, oh my gosh,
I can't believe we just did that trip
again. But then you have a whole nother year to forget.
There
so
you go.
It works out.
Yeah. Amnesia's great. Well, this is great, Kirsten. I don't want to hold you up too much. We know you got a lot more to go this month. Seriously. And look forward to seeing you in Vegas.
I would love that. I look forward to seeing you guys, too. And tell Stetson I said hi.
We will. Thank you so much.
You bet. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Hi, I'm Rusty Wright, and this is NFR Extra.
Vegas awaits. So book your hotel now at NFRExperience.com. 10th episode, NFR Extra. And we got a man, young man, that's chasing the all-around title, but a little differently than we've been used to for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
He's in 2 Rough Stock events. Welcome to the show, Stetson Wright.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Stetson. This was a good one to get you on here, and it was very timely with what's been going on, and we've been eyeing you for a while to get you on this show.
Yes, and we've heard a lot about you from our last podcast interview with Miss Kirsten Vold. She could not stop saying your name, and we know you are also a fan of her and her company.
Yeah, she's probably one of my favorites, at least the nicest one.
Nicest is good. Where are you coming from right now?
Yeah. Home.
Where's home?
Milford, Utah.
Nice. Utah. It's got to be beautiful there right now.
Yeah, pretty nice.
So, Stetson, this is all new ground for you. How are you feeling about where your mind's at and how healthy you feel right now?
I feel pretty good. I mean, I'm a little overwhelmed with all that's going on, but it's been fun, and I couldn't be any happier the way things are going right now.
Do your brothers help you out with understanding kind of the magnitude of what you're dealing with right now?
Not really. We try. I try.
Them darn brothers. They aren't any help at all.
Well, it just sounds like, you know, in watching you guys as a family, you guys just handle everything as it comes. Yep. And in the way you look at things.
You almost feel like as a fan, right? You look at the whole family and you feel like they've been doing this their whole lives. I mean, for generations, right? Obviously, it's a big family, but there's a lot of experience and they just live and breathe off of each other.
Yeah. I mean, is that something that grows with you guys as your success?
Yeah. Gosh. I don't really know. Never been asked these stuff.
No, you're going to be asked these questions a lot come December.
That's great. So you mentioned you have a lot going on right now. I know that maybe there's a congratulations out there on the engagement. And do you have a scheduled date for wedding plans? And we also heard a little birdie say that you have possibly a baby on the way.
Yep, got a baby coming in January, and the date hasn't really been set for getting married, but
It has not been set.
It's gonna happen.
Maybe on the road, or is she coming to see you in any of these roads?
Just go through the drive-through down in Vegas.
Yeah.
Nice.
We have a couple of those.
Yeah.
Well, and it, you know, and knowing your family, kind of we've seen them. There's so many components of success for your family. Why bulls? I mean, seriously, you've chosen bulls, and obviously you're still sticking with the saddle, but now it's paying off. What's up with the bulls? Why riding the bulls?
I don't know. I guess bronc riding makes the bull riding a lot easier, and I really like the bulls. I like the bronc just as much. I've won a little more in the bull riding this year, but hopefully the luck is changing. And
how does it make it easier?
Yeah, that was. Yeah. That's a bold statement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bronc riding, I shouldn't make it harder than it should be, but it is a lot. Like with the bull rope, you just stick your hand in there and hold on. There's not really much to it.
Not as much technique.
Bronc riding, you got to have your saddle set right. If you don't lift, you're probably going to fall off. If you don't stay back, you're not going to spur very high. You won't get a good score. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So your brothers are obviously your competition, your family competition in the bronc events. Who's your competition in the bull riding events?
Really, all of the guys. We've all won a ton of money this year, and there's literally nobody there's not one that stands out over the rest. Like, they're all riding really good. Like, Trevor Kastner and Sage and Parker Breading and Clayton Sellers, Boudreaux Campbell. There's a ton of them that, like, stand out, and they've won a ton.
Sage had a good Calgary Stampede.
It did.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So he made the decision, right, not to pass on his option for a re-ride.
Yep.
And then he ended up, correct me if I'm wrong, with the bull Night Moves.
Yep.
And he came back and he rode that bull for over a 90-point ride to win it all, correct?
Yep.
I mean, how often? I mean, he, and again, I believe that was the same bull that he won Calgary on the year prior.
Yeah. Well, I think it was 17. He's won it on odd years.
Okay.
15, 17, 19.
There you go. See, you do have competition that you keep an eye on.
And I got a question for that, Stetson.
I mean, I've looked at you for a while. So.
But, I mean, as a competitor, and this is where, you know, the high-end folks like yourself, you know, and the success that you guys push for, you're a historian, right, for bull riding and saddle bronc. I mean, you're obviously studying this. I mean, you're looking at – how are you looking at standings? What are you doing just to see what's going on around you to know where you're at?
So kind of a strategic plan.
Yeah,
being
absolutely.
A historian, you have to – yeah.
Yes, yep. Yeah.
So what was that?
So like so understanding, you know, Sage's impact and what he's done to get to this point, or even the history of things, you know – you talk about like if we are interviewing other guys like in other pro sports, a guy like Kobe Bryant would tell you how much he studied Michael Jordan, right? And like how that kind of impacted his. I mean, it sounds like you do the same thing because you just rattled off some stuff that you knew about Mr. Kimsey that, you know, I don't think a lot of people would know.
Yeah, I've watched him ever since he got into the PRC level, and I've studied his videos. I want to ride just like him. He's really, he rides, I think, about as perfect as you can get on a bull. And then I watch my dad and Rusty and Ryder's videos in the bronc riding. And in the bull riding, it's Sage and JB.
Mm-hmm.
But
Mr. JB Mooney.
When it comes to bronc riding,
you get to see it daily.
Da-da-da-da-da-da.
But and here's why I'm bringing that question up.
Retired.
But here's why I'm bringing that up, Stetson. Is you're coming out of the youth circuit, right? And if anything that I think that's impacted youth, we go back to the 90s and the influx of technology, the ability to record, to look at your plays, and then go back out on the field and do it. It sounds like that's happening a lot with rodeo today where, you know, let's just talk about your dad and everyone else prior. They weren't able to access videos on a mobile phone and look at how someone did something differently. And you clearly have that at your disposal and the craft. So And Tuff Cooper touched on this too about remembering you coming up through the youth circuit. Like, how important has the youth circuit been for you in the studying and getting better, and then now where you're at? I mean, has that Do you look back to some of that stuff as you're going along this tour right now and what you've learned? And I mean, how impact is the youth circuit and the ability to study, you know, gentlemen above you or that are right next to you? I mean, how has that impacted you with the youth circuit?
It's helped me a lot. I mean, like, just because I'm in the pro level now, it doesn't mean I don't still watch Sage's and Davey's videos, because I still like watching them. It's just what I like to do. If anything, their rides pump me up. I watch them a few times, and it's helped me a lot growing up watching those guys and watching my dad and brothers.
So even though you're brothers and you have one sitting next to you right now, even though they're competing in the Bronx, are they still giving you advice on the bulls?
Yeah, Ryder was actually, he won nationals before.
Really?
He could have kept going. He probably could have won a few all-around titles already if he would have just kept riding. But
he's just saving that for you.
He's just letting me have it all the same, I guess.
Now, that's good to know, I think, for anybody. So it sounds like you have, like, a, obviously with strategy, almost like a geek approach to understanding what's going on around you and using that technology. And knowing that, you know, understanding kind of where you're at now, obviously you said it does get a little overwhelming. You know, Sage had talked about, as he was coming through, and where he's at now, we were just hanging out with him a couple weeks ago for a photo shoot. And one of the things he said, and if you can kind of touch on this, and it's not bashing, he said this. He said his style is boring, you know, how he rides bulls, but it's efficient, obviously. Many titles to back that up. Can you expand on what he means by that when he says it's not, like, he's not a stylistic guy the way he rides? Because we were talking about his imagery, you know, when we take photographs, he doesn't portray well because he's boring the way he rides. What does he mean by that?
He might say it's boring, but he like, it's so calm. He makes it look effortless, I think, is what he's trying to get at. And he really does. Like, a lot of people that come to watch, they want to see those guys that flop all over them and about get bucked off, make a 90-point ride. But he rides them, like, toes turned out both ways, up on his rope, like, always has, like, a perfect form. And he stays loose and cool riding, but it doesn't look sloppy, and I don't really know.
If you're a judge, you're a judge, and you see Sage Kimsey, you see his ride, you see his style of ride, and then you put another bull rider up there on the exact same ride, but a different style that this bull rider has, and how would the judges score differently? You know what I mean? So Sage is calm, cool, looks effortless, right? And then you put another guy on top of this bull, and he's moving all over the place. He still gets his 8-second ride. He's still on the same bull. Who's going to score?
Gosh, it depends on the day, the judge, and the stock. Because Sage could make a 45-point bull look like a dink little bull, and they would only mark him like 85, and then they'd get a 19-20 point bull with the guy that makes him look like he's a 45-point bull.
So you say 45. So just to let everybody know, and I know Boyd and the announcers explain it all the time, you know, 50 points towards the stock and then 50 points towards the rider. Yep. So you're saying that the bull may, from a judge, will score a 45, right? And with Sage.
Yeah, like an average bull, like 40.
Yep.
And then, you could flop over a 40-point bull, and the crowd really get into it. It might influence the judge to be
give that bull a higher score.
Yeah, mark him 45, and you at 45, and you'd be 90 points.
Yep.
But and it all just depends on the day. But the judges kind of know how consistent he is, and they.
I'm sure they know his name. I'm sure they've heard of him.
Yeah. I mean, they know that he rides the rank one, so they don't – I don't really pay close enough attention, but I honestly don't know how they score him. I just watch his rides. I guess I don't pay attention.
Well, you're impressed because you know the effort that it takes to do what he does, totally right? So – you're impressed. And just like you said, the fans are not as impressed because he does make it look easy, right? So it's not as exciting. So when Say says, hey, this is boring. So when Say says it's boring, it's because,
they don't again.
Exactly. I get it. No. I get it. Totally get it.
Well, it's funny because that conversation started from talking about photographs, right? Mm-hmm. And we had one of our main photographers that works with us, Tom Donahue, you know, nationally known. He does the National Finals Rodeo. And he was just, you know, it was funny. We were just talking about Sage. And he's like, I've shot you a million times. And he's like, I can never get you in the frame. I can never, like, it's he's stuck to the bull. And it was just an interesting conversation. But so we've talked about Sage plenty here. We're talking to Stetson,
yes,
right?
Yes, we are.
I do have this question, and knowing that, you know, you're a big fan of the folks above you and then the ones that have accomplished quite a few things, how is it when you're now, you're in the...
You're there.
Yeah, you're in the conversation.
You are there.
We're talking about Sage, we're also talking about Stetson. So
yes, right.
How does that feel right now, amongst everything else, to be competing against Sage Kimsey and just Sage? I mean, I know there's a lot of guys, but how does that feel? Because he's really set the bar pretty high for you guys. How does that feel right now?
It's awesome. I mean, he rides really good. I don't really know, but he's one of my favorite bull riders ever, but I'm dang for sure going to try to beat him.
As well you should.
I mean, absolutely. Hey, if we weren't competitive, we wouldn't be where we are.
Well, there's no reason to get a gold buckle.
Absolutely.
Why wear a gold buckle?
Yeah.
You know,
there's a lady by the name of Sherry Wright that says you need that buckle.
Yeah. I hope I can get that.
You have a baby on the way and a new bride on the way, so you need the buckle.
I got to win all three buckles this year.
That's right.
So, all right. That's a great kind of little segue before we get out of here and get you on the road. Thinking about Thomas Mack Center, Stetson, you've been there. I know you've probably been all around that building, but never inside the chutes and ready to come out and ride. What I know, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves here, but what's just the thinking, the feeling of being at the Thomas Mack Center and competing for a world title? I mean, is that, have you even thought about that yet?
Oh, I've never leave my head.
I'm sure you just look over at your brother right now and just give him one of the biggest smirks ever and say, guess what?
But I've been dreaming of my whole life. When you watch your two brothers go there and do so good, it really makes you want to go there too.
I couldn't even imagine the family love you guys have. And this doesn't happen in too many other sports where you have this many folks within a family that win the way you guys do. It's very impressive.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And we talked about that with our Miss Kirsten Bolt.
Yeah, she
the
definitely.
The bloodlines, right?
Yeah, we were talking about bloodlines, and she brought up the Wright brothers, and it kind of segued into we were talking about stock and kind of how does – well, I mean, you're in the middle of this. We were talking about how the bloodlines trickle down. So, like, if you go – you know, you focus on a champion stock, right, and hopefully that you purchase that, and then eventually – you're going to have, you know, champion stock. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she was like, well, it kind of works that way and it kind of doesn't. And her great example was is that you have two kids and one becomes a lawyer and the other one needs a lawyer. but anyway, I mean, it's just, it's interesting to see what you guys are up against and knowing that can, you'll come across that your entire career, you know, a horse that maybe someone in your dad rode or something like that. That's pretty cool, I think.
Everybody wants a painted valley, right? That's the
penny. Oh,
man, I wish. My dad, one more money on that horse than probably any horse I've ever seen.
That's what she said. Everybody benefited from. She used the term pennies from heaven.
Pennies from heaven, yes.
He was.
She goes, I just look at everybody now and just smile and smirk. You know, a $2,500 stud fee. Heck yes.
So where, okay, obviously in our earlier conversation, where are you headed now? What's going on? You're on the road. It's July. I believe you're going to Salinas next. Is that where you're going?
Yep. We're at Salinas and then Napa and then Cheyenne, Wyoming.
The big day. There you go. The big Cheyenne day. Frontier days.
Right on. Wow. This is good.
Stetson.
Yeah.
You're the man. Buy your brother lunch. Thank you. That time of the day. or make him drive so you can eat. You know, maybe you just keep continuing to be competitive. I get it.
Yeah, you got to raise that bar. You gotta.
Yeah, I gotta make him drive so I can wear out some of his energy.
There you go. Hey, dude, thank you so much. It's been great. Awesome. Good luck. Keep up.
Keep up
the competition. We love watching you, and enjoy, like you just said, have fun. That's what it's all about. So
yeah,
congratulations.
I won't try. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Hi, I'm world champion Jacob Crawley, and you're listening to NFR Extra.
Well, that's it. We are done with episode 10.
Wow. 10.
10. 10. 10.
Where does time go?
Yeah, it's been by pretty quick. We started this bad boy, what, late winter, early spring, and here we are in the middle of summer. Vegas, it's about a 105, I think, right out as we're recording.
On a cool day.
Yeah, that actually is for July. But hey, join us in 2 weeks when we have Mr. Tyson Durfee, world champ, and they may both have red hair, I think.
Mm,
maybe, right?
Maybe.
And Fallon Taylor joins this show.
Wow.
Gonna be nice.
How exciting is that?
Actually, every episode is different than the last and going forward, so.
Envy, I know we say this every single episode, but we couldn't do this without our guests, so we want to reach out again and say thank you to Mr. Stetson Wright and Miss Kirsten Vold.
Yes, and we wish them good luck and safe travels. I know there's a lot of folks out on the road as you're listening, and they are too. So good luck with everything you're all doing, and
safe travels.
Yeah. Gotta make it out to Vegas, where the big boys roam, with the rovers and the racers and the bulls and the browns, and the ladies in the skin-tight wranglers and the cowboy hats.